Good morning, everyone. I'm Mireya Solis, Senior Fellow and Night Chair in Japan Studies here at Brookings. It is a pleasure to work this morning with the U.S.-Japan Research Institute in hosting Professor Komiyama, who will discuss his recent book, Beyond the Limits to Growth, New Ideas for Sustainability from Japan. Let me just say a word of introduction. I think that here in Washington, we have been discussing Japan's economy and its future potential in rather predictable ways. It seems that we have only one frame when we think about where Japan is at today and where it might be going, and that is a framework of Abenomics. And I don't mean to imply that this is not a very important conversation to have, but I think that we all stand to benefit if we look at the problem with fresh eyes, with a different framework, and think about where Japan may be going by focusing, as Professor Komiyama does, on the very important issue of sustainability. And I also very much appreciate that Professor Komiyama challenges the conventional wisdom. And some of the issues that are frequently considered handicaps for Japan, such as the energy dependency, the low fertility rate, the rapid aging of the population, I think that he highlights how these issues could be tackled creatively and perhaps they could become sources of strength for Japan in the future. So we're in really for a wonderful presentation and discussion today. Let me just briefly introduce our speaker, we're delighted to host him. Dr. Hiroshi Komiyama is currently the chairman of the Mitsubishi Research Institute and president of the Platinum Society Network. He's also a founder and advisory board member of the U.S.-Japan Research Institute and president emeritus of the University of Tokyo. Dr. Komiyama also serves as an advisor to the Japanese government on subjects such as education and aging. So please join me in welcoming Professor Komiyama to the podium.
Thank you, Miria. Very good introduction. Because I cannot speak English quick, I will directly go into the details now. I'm talking about the overcoming the limits to growth. I believe we are living in a very large turning point of the history of human being. That is what I would like to share with you first. And I will talk about what is the 21st century and what is Japan very briefly and the Platinum Society. And I think the action is the key point. And this graph shows the per capita GDP, but divided by the then world average per capita GDP. So here we have okay. Here we have three or four. This means the people in the developed countries earn three or four times the average of the world. And back to 1,000 years ago here, all the people earn mostly same in the country. This means the major industry was agriculture. And so it's almost same in country to country. Industrial revolution changed that situation, increasing the productivity of a person. And the those countries who started industrial revolution became developed countries, started from European countries and North American and Australian continent. And what happened to the other continents, Africa, Asia, and South America? most of them became colonies. That was the one of the sides of human history. But now, look at these decade, the most recent decade, the sharply declining. Of course, the GDP per capita of developed countries hasn't decreased yet. It's still increasing 1% or very few percent. But the world average increased. I showed only China and India here. So now it's sharply approaching. This is the situation of today, now. So, this is Japan. Japan was here, Meiji Restoration started. At that time, the Japan may have become colonies, but we didn't. Yeah, sharply we catched up the Western industrialization, and we became developed countries. Twice these drop of economy happened due to wars against China and against Russia, was there, the first one. And second one was the Pacific War, and we lost everything at that time. But except for these two periods, economical drop, we caught up with the Industrial Revolution very rapidly. This is the situation of Japan. I think Japan is the only country who could do that. And this is the second great turning point. It is the world average lifespan. Do you know? In 1900, world average lifespan was as short as 31 years old. 31 years old. Most of them already died. But now, after 2011, world average lifespan became 70 years. What does it mean? This means now most of the people can eat, can be fed well, because I checked the persons who I know in the history. For example, the Julius Caesar was assassinated at the age of 67. And most of them lived long, the people whom I know the name. The longest one is Archimedes, 82 degrees, but I don't know how reliable are the statistics of that time. But anyway, people whose name I know lived long, but the average lifespan was 24, 25 years old. What does it mean? Most of the people, most of the normal people couldn't eat well. So babies died, and there were no refrigerators. When not sufficient in famines, people died also. The average was 24, 25 years old. So 70 years old lifetime span means most of the people now can eat. Obesity is rather more important than hunger. Now, in the major part of the world. So this is the second very important turning point of our history. And the third one is the saturation of artifacts, I say. This is the how many cars are possessed by one person, because the this number, 58 million in Japan, is the car running now. I divided it by the population. Then it makes 0.45. So if this number is 0.5, one car is possessed by two persons ratio. So surprisingly, in most of the countries from Japan to Germany, it's 0.5. Already, one car is possessed of two persons. And that is the saturation of cars. This is the point. This happens every artifact, including refrigerator, television set, or something like that. So, how many cars are sold a year in Japan? It's very simple. The scrapped number of scrapped cars is the new sales of a car. It's balances. Now in Japan, 12 years is the average lifetime of a car. So 58 million divided by 12 years equals 4.9 million cars per year. This is the annual sales of a car. And this doesn't grow because the population is almost constant. Not only in Japan, in most of the developed countries. United States is a little different from that situation. But in most of the developed countries, population saturates and artifact saturates. So new selling saturates. This is the situation. Why? Growth of economy becomes small. So that is the reason why we are doing TPP or other economical treaties to sell for the new markets. But the importance is the rate of growth in developing countries are very rapid. 2007, two cars are possessed by 100 Chinese people. But now, 10 cars are possessed already. If they grow like the Japan, France, or Germany, then within 7 to 10 years, Chinese economy will saturate. I think it has already been starting, Chinese saturation. This is very big thing. We should be very careful about the situation where economical engine will be disappearing. This is a situation. Three. Then what is Japan? First, Japan overcame the risk, danger of becoming colony. Second, which I show is the Japan. This is not a picture of PM2.5 in China. This is Japan. But photograph of Kita Kyushu of 1960s, 50 years ago. But what happened now? This is the present. This is the bay of Kita Kyushu. This is the present. People can swim now. It took 50 years, but we recovered. The second point of Japan overcame energy crisis. Maybe you remember the oil shock. First oil shock or energy crisis happened in 1973. And 1979, second energy crisis happened. During this decade, oil price hiked 10 times, 20 times, 30 times. And the all the economy in the world had a huge shock. But Japan was most vulnerable because we depended on the cheap oil to industrialize. So, but we overcame the risk by improving the energy efficiency in manufacturing side. This is the case of cement technology. This shows how much energy is consumed to produce 1 ton of cement. In Japanese industry decreased to half. I'm sorry, this is United States at 2000. It consumes 1.7 times Japan. They used 1960s technology of Japan. So, every manufacturing industry in Japan did it, including steel production, glass production, pulp production, and so on. And so, Japan formed world's strongest manufacturing industry. We are proud of that. This is the second one. And in total, I'll short up the long history of 2,000 years. But what is Japan? Before we closed Japan outside in Edo period, start of Edo period, which was 16,000, then Japan was one of the peaks, one of the civilization peaks in the world, showing various indexes, steel production or manufacturing of arsenals or average lifetime. As I showed you, average lifetime shows how many people could eat. So, in 1600, we closed our society to outside for 250 years. During that time, industrial revolution started in England. Yeah, the large-scale production by standardization. This is the essence of industrial revolution. Japan did not do that. What did we do? We developed very sophisticated culture in this peace period. For example, the sashimi, tempura, and noodle were started in this period. And also tea ceremony, not a tea party. Japanese tea ceremony is something like life. So we are proud of our culture, but in 1860s, we had some very big danger to be colonized. But we could come up with that, and the high economic growth we realized, and answering pollution, because Japan is a small country, densely populated. There, industrialization was very rapid, and so severe pollution, air pollution, water pollution, soil pollution happened. But we overcame that difficulty. And as I showed before, we answered the energy crisis, and also realizing the world's longest lifespan. Consider economic growth, good environment, and energy, and long living. these are hopes of the people for the history. Or in other words, this is the target of civilization. So Japan succeeded as other developed countries did. So our difficulties, our problems, including global warming, aging of the society, energy issue, new energy issue like that, are the challenge of civilizations from now on. So Japan is in advance of the other part of the world to have these problems. So if we succeed in solving these issues, then we will be able to show you the new model of 21st century. That is very basic idea of mine. Then, what are the visions? This is the question. What are the visions? I think now majority of the people, regular citizens, not Julius Caesar, regular citizens in developed countries have enough food, clothing, shelter, mobility, information, and longevity. This is very unique feature of today. And it will not be later than the mid-21st century that the majority of the people in the world will own them. In China, soon, in India, and in, I don't know, North Korea, and sub-Saharan area, I don't know, but the major part, people will enjoy the materials which we have in the developed countries. Then, what do we wish to have at that time? I think quality, as well as the quantity. So, Platinum Society shines with dignity. Gold shines like GDP. But after not only GDP, we need more quality, I think. Platinum Society shines with dignity. And now, about 130 mayors and governors work with me. Go for Platinum Society. And about 80 companies, major companies, help me. And what do we know? What do we wish to have? That is the real discussion. What do you wish to have more? This is the real question, I think, of the 21st century, because we have materials, cars, televisions, refrigerators, houses. What do you wish to have? What do young people wish to have? This is the real question, I think. And we are discussing. And I think necessary conditions are ecology. That is one thing. In Japan, now the huge typhoon visits us more frequently than before. Bigger typhoon due to global warming. And we have some resources difficulty. And we have aging society. Probably elder people need to participate in the society. Then they will become happier. And job opportunities, this is a huge issue. Because the productivity increases. The production of materials are constant. Then we will lose jobs. That is a very important issue. So I will a little talk about in detail. This is Sumida River, same river, in 1967 when I graduated from the university. And right is now. Ayu, it's a name of a fish. And ayu, which can live only in clean water, recovered in this river now. You can enjoy fishing. Are you fishing in most of the Tokyo rivers? This is unique. This is very unique in mega or giga city in the world. I think this is only one. And that is ecological situation. Another is energy. In 1973, we solved the issue of energy crisis. At that time, the 2/3 of energy were used in manufacturing. But now situation is different. I call daily life, transportation, and business, and houses. 60% of energy is consumed by daily life of people, our regular citizens, ourselves. And we can decrease this part quite significantly. I will show. This is the plot of energy consumption by a car mobilization. This is theoretical plot. Plot the reciprocal of fuel value against the weight of a car. Then if technology is the same, it makes a straight line passing the origin. Look at this. Reds are European and American cars, sorry, including GM or Volkswagen. Blues are Japanese cars. At the same weight of a car, 20% less energy is consumed. Why this plot makes a straight line through origin? That is because if there is no friction, automobile doesn't need any energy. Where friction exists in a car, it's between tires and earth. This friction, theoretically, proportional to the weight of a car. And so if the car weight is zero, it doesn't consume any gasoline. This makes straight lines. And if you ride on a hybrid car, I am doing, then energy consumption will become half. And furthermore, electric or fuel cells cars are used. Further, half. And in 2050, car weight will become lighter and lighter, and probably 1/2. Then, how much gasoline is consumed in 2050? 1/8, because 1/4 and 1/2. Then, gasoline consumption by same size the car becomes 1/8. How many cars will run at 2050? If we assume that all the people own car at a rate of 1 car per 2 persons, cars in the world will become 4 times. Okay, come on. Gasoline consumption will become 1/2. This is the hope due to technology. Other hope is bicycle. So, I talked about the transportation. And second is the houses. This is my famous, rather famous, Komiyama Eco House. Energy from outside is zero. My house is equipped with solar panel. and quite a good energy efficiency. And then the energy consumption, energy supplied from outside is zero. Huge potential. Same as in the buildings. So, this is a question to you. Now the artifacts, including houses, business means buildings and automobiles. These number of these artifacts saturated, then almost saturated. In Japan, almost fully saturated. Also in Europe. Then energy efficiency is being improved significantly. Then why is energy consumption increasing? It's not increasing. It started to decrease. This is a hope. This is Japan data. The straight lines show GDP. And the red shows the energy consumption, total energy consumption. Blue line shows electricity consumption. Started to decrease energy consumption. Although GDP still continues to increase. Next, I will show same data, but different plot. I took the values at 1973 as origin, one. And the ratio is plotted. Then, very clear. What is this? Until 1973, Japanese economy depended strongly on heavy industry. So GDP growth is made by the increase of manufacturing productions. Then if GDP becomes double, energy consumption becomes double. This is the situation before 1973. At 1973, I showed in the case of cement production, industry started to energy efficiency. So what happened? GDP increases. GDP increases. At this time, about 4% a year. But for 12 years, red is energy. For 12 years, no increase in energy happened. So GDP became $2 trillion US dollars to $3.5 trillion. Without no energy increase. Very important. GDP increase doesn't necessarily be accompanied with energy increase. But the industry and efficiency improvement is this one. But the blue line, electricity, increases together with the GDP. Why? This is service businesses. It consumes energy in buildings. So it increases. But not so much as in this period of industry, because the one GDP energy consumption is one-third in service industry compared to the manufacturing industry. And finally, it started saturation of artifacts and energy efficiency improvement. Clearly, we can increase GDP without increasing energy consumption. This is the hope of developed countries, because we are going to services, services, services. This is China, I will say. Still, GDP and total energy and electricity increases simultaneously. This means still heavy industry related and their efforts to increase energy efficiency is not enough at all. China can decrease the energy efficiency like this industry and efficiency period already. They should do. The growth, economic growth is their right. But the efficiency is duty for the humankind, I believe. This is United States. United States is a strange country. It's a sum of developed country and developing world. And so it's very difficult to understand. But anyway, energy consumption started to decrease, similar to Japan. This is the hope, I think. I hope some Paris COP21 will succeed. Probably will be succeeded because the United States and China can do. So this is the... How much should I talk? I should stop? Stop talking. Okay. Then, self-sufficiency is... I'll skip. This is my proposal to Japanese government and Japanese people. We should be self-sufficient with respect to energy. Because the energy consumption decreases, and we have sufficient technology and resources of renewable energy. So we can be self-sufficient with energy. And the second is urban mines. Urban mine means we have cars, buildings, and under the condition of saturation, we need 5 million cars, considering the scrapping of 5 million cars. This means we have all the metals we need, including iron and rare earths. Japanese industry recover all the rare earths contained in the car. So, under the saturation of automobiles, we don't need to import new mines or new worlds. So, urban mines provide us with sufficient and necessary resources. This is the situation of the 21st century. And we want food, water, including these very basic things. Okay, I will stop. Another is the aging issue. This is also very important. We will make this pinch to chance because the aging will be the very important source of new businesses, I believe. I will stop. Please read it. Anyway, I'm talking, but we need actions. to change our world. That is my final remark. Thank you very much for attending. Okay.
Sorry, I talk too much. Actually, I can't speak English quick. If I talk in Japanese.
I think the mic is on. Can you hear me? All right, well, thank you so much, Professor Komiyama. That was really a fantastic presentation, and you covered so many different topics and with such a broad and insightful perspective. So I would like to take the opportunity to ask a few questions and then let the audience, obviously, I'm sure there are other questions. And I want to start with the very famous Komiyama Eco House. And if you can tell us a little bit about, first of all, how comfortable is it living in this house? And second, and I think more importantly, I understand this is a model house. But in your mind, what would it take for this to disseminate so that it could actually become a standard in Japan? What investments, what kind of policies would be necessary so that these new communities would develop these new self-sufficient houses?
Okay. I'm very comfortable in my house. Yeah, it's probably some special situation of Japanese houses. Of course, in 100 years ago, we didn't have any refrigerator. So Japanese summer is very hot. And so Japanese houses has equipped with thick roof and very good ventilation from outside. So when we had some heating, air conditioning, it was very inefficient. And so we should have, your country, your Mexico, the Western Germany or here, Washington, D.C., is very cold in winter. Mm-hmm. So you need to have very thick wall to avoid the, so very different. Mm-hmm. So in Japan, better insulation and good ventilation makes healthier, makes people healthier. Yes. We have data to move to a like Komiyama Eco House. Mm-hmm. Now the Japanese house makers provide us with such type. Mm-hmm. Most of them are such type. And the people's health is significantly be improved. This is the data. And so I'm very comfortable.
Wonderful to know. And then I wanted to move on and ask you a little bit about the demographic challenges. I know that most of your presentation was about energy issues and the remarkable track record that Japan has in overcoming many energy issues and pollution and so forth. And then at the end of your presentation, you were getting into the question of the aging society. And I know that in your book, you spend a lot of time talking about how to create a dynamic aging society. So what I'm going to ask is a little bit different, but does go into the demographic topic, and that is that I actually have been quite surprised that recently in conversations with many people who visit from Japan, I find that for the first time they bring up a topic that I used to think was off limits, and that is immigration. Because that would be perhaps a way to create a sustainable Japan, that is that you let younger people come, and that would then generate new demand, that would generate the supply of labor force and so forth. So I know that this was outside the scope of your talk, but if we're thinking about revolutions, it could be a green revolution of a different kind in the sense that you actually lower the average age of the population. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about...
Oh, yeah. Immigration is one point. Mm-hmm. But consider how quick the developing countries are developing now. Mm. China is one child policy. Mm-hmm. Birth rate of Thailand is 1.4, less than Japan. Indian birth rate very drastically dropping. Who will come to United States? This is a very important point. So, to accept the refugee people from Iraqi or that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But we need to improve our domestic situation demographically. That is my idea. And so what is the society where young people don't want to have babies? We don't need to have such society. So, two children is some very healthy situation. Of course, it's an average. It's freedom. it's a freedom. But I think we need to create a society where young people wish to have two children. Mm. Unfortunately, my son has one child, and my daughter has one child.
Thank you very much, Komiya-san. And my last question, and this is a little bit of a contradiction in the sense that I started the opening remarks saying that it's important to move away just from the discussion on Abenomics, as important as that is. And in a way, I'm going to come back to Abenomics, even though I started my introduction today in that way, because many of the policies that you described here may have a connection to the current Abenomics framework in the sense that, you know, the emphasis on technology, on education, and so forth. So I was wondering, when you present your plans to the Japanese government, when you talk about energy-independent, resource-independent Japan, and all these other energy self-sufficiency efforts, what do you see in the Abenomics policies that you think it's on the right track? What do you think needs to be emphasized more? How do you think the current thinking on how to revitalize the Japanese economy relates to your framework?
Okay. Are you talking about the first Abenomics?
That's also a separate question. There's Abenomics 1.0 or Abenomics 2.0,
2.0.
whichever you want to.
In the 1.0, mm-hmm. There are three arrows.
Yes.
The first arrow made weaker yen. I think because we had too strong yen before that, and so this succeeded, I think. The other two arrows didn't throw. In particular, growth, economic growth strategy didn't work at all, I think, because growth policy should be in platinum society. Platinum industry. There are two types of demands. One is saturating demand, like cars, buildings, like that. And the creative demands, which is related to platinum society. The possibility, for example, I showed in the last slide the robotic technology to help us, mm-hmm. to help people. In the 20th century, robot helped people's labor in industry. But in the 21st century, it helps us. Now, my neuron ignites to send electric current, and these current working. If we detect these current by some means, we know I wish to do like this. Then the motor rotates. This is the robot technology. Some prototype has already been sold. So as long as our brain is alive, mm-hmm. we can be independent. Mm-hmm. we can be self-working. That is our vision. This area creates huge possibility of new businesses using technology. I think we should go that way. This should be the third arrow of Abenomics 1.0. But we failed to do that, and so it didn't work.
Very interesting. So let's open it up. If you can please wait for the mic and identify yourself and ask a concise question. I have a gentleman here in the front, and then we'll make our way.
Please make the English
thank you very much.
My ear is not so good.
We are on the same level almost. thank you so much. It's very exciting to listen to you. I used to be involved between Europe and Japan, so I was behind over 20 agreements, government to government, joint companies, joint research for the European Union, and so on, from Scandinavia, France, Italy, and so on. This was in the 80s and 90s. My conclusion was, quite a frustration, the potential of cooperation between Japan in all industries, from nuclear, computers, and so on, and European countries, as well as between European Union and Japan, was much larger than what we could get with 6 trips per year from Paris to Tokyo and so on. So everyone involved, from President Mitterrand to small companies, regions and so on. My question is, I'm very excited about your idea. And you have here the number of members, quite impressive on Japanese side. One problem we had is cultural translation and sustainability of cooperation between Japan and various countries. To be more specific now, in your case with energy, environment, and so on, I would advise to have you pick up like Nordic countries in Europe. Finland is not Scandinavia, but Nordic countries. What about now implementation of your ideas? One of my questions is, how do you, generally speaking, how are you going to go about it? And a specific one even, I would suggest to have specific partnerships with Scandinavia for environment, for eco-friendly products and so on, with France on something else, with Italy. How can you get about it? When are you going to be ready for next step, to be more specific for the implementation of your vision?
You should give some advice to me.
I will send the bill later. Okay,
yeah, I think you are right. And now I am doing several efforts to talk with Scandinavian countries, including Denmark, and Norway and Sweden. They have some sympathy to my idea. But I think the East Asia is very important because I'm a chemical engineer originally. And I have many friends in China. And we agreed before that kind of pollution happened, the cheapest way is to avoid it. They could do that. That was much cheaper. And so we have many collaborations now with East Asian countries, including Indonesia. For example, in Surabaya, it's the second biggest city. They introduced Japanese recycling system of garbages and such kind of various things are NPO-based or NGO-based.
communications have started, but they not quick as I wish, very honestly. Thank you.
Thank you. So in the back, this gentleman with a hand raised.
Thank you very much for the very thoughtful presentation. And my name is Atsushi Yamakoshi. I'm from Keidanren, USA. I have two related questions. One is very fundamental. You know, as you pointed out, we are very proud of the fact that Japan could overcome so many difficulties. But I cannot help asking you why Japan could. This is a first question. I think there is something secret in Japanese characteristics. So this is my first question. But second question related. We are facing lots of difficulties even today. And following up this first point, how do you think we can kind of reproduce such a potential of Japanese people to overcome the difficulties? I think mainly by education, but the education may take several decades. So what do you think we can do right now to have realize the Japanese people's potentiality to overcome these problems? Thank you.
Thank you, Yamakoshi-san. Kumiyama-sensei.
Yeah. I wish to have 2 hours.
I think the audience wishes that too.
But I talked with her before this meeting. What is the characteristics of Japan? Umezao Tadao, he's a very famous archaeologist of Kyoto University. I agree. I have some sympathy his idea. There are 2 areas which had very high civilization. Far west, including England, France, and Germany. And Japan, far east, Japan. And why? There are very difficult people in the middle, like Genghis Khan or Ottoman Turkey or such kind. They invaded all around them. Even China was invaded and controlled. And the civilization was crushed from the scratch to the scratch. But the only two parts, only these 2 parts, were not invaded. So some continuously, spontaneously, civilization developed. That is not my idea, but the big Umezawa's idea. I agree with it. And another point, and something, some part question, answer to your second question. In Japan, we had 650 years era of peace from 800 to 1200 and 1600 to 1850 years. In these 650 years, we didn't have any war domestically and internationally. So Japan is a very peaceful country. We love peace. We don't like struggle. This interferes the breakthrough of Japan, I think. We are not good at very rapid very rapid change, which the strange people in the West Coast can do in California, not New England, but the California is a very singular point of the human history, and they can change at once. Japan is very different. How we can overcome these difficulties in globalization and rapid change? This is a very quick answer.
Okay, so now I'm going to take questions two at a time because we're running out of time. So I'm going to go to the back first, those two people with. And if you can be very concise so that everybody has a chance to pose their question to Professor Komiyama.
Hello, sir. My name is Shota Sato from Tokyo Broadcasting System. Thank you for your great presentation. My question was on energy. You were talking about efficiency. And do you think Japan should still stick to the nuclear power plant after the Fukushima incident? If so, why? And if not, how gradual do you think we can substitute it by any other resource? Thank you.
Thank you. And then the lady right next to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for inspirational presentation. I'm Eun-Jung Lim from SAIS, John Hopkins University. I'd like to ask a very quick question. I'd love to ask your own views on the resource self-sufficiency, compatibility between that vision and the global tsunami of global commercialism. That's what I'd love to actually ask.
Tsunami issue?
I mean, global commercialism is a kind of tsunami. It's an unstoppable trend all over the world. But how would you elaborate your own view again about the compatibility between the self-sufficiency?
Compatibility of what?
Of your vision again on the resource more self-sufficient society with the global commercialism. For example, TPP too. I mean, the shale gas might be one of the main actually trade.
First nuclear issue. If we can use existing nuclear reactors, it's much more easier. But Fukushima happened. This is the fact. Even Germany get out from the nuclear vision. I think from the economical and technological point of view, we can do without nuclear because renewables become so rapidly cheaper and more economical and economical. And so we can do that. But of course, so huge investment has already been done to nuclear. So not using them is a heavy difficulty to Japan. But I think we can do that even without nuclear. That is my opinion. And the compatibility, I don't understand where the question, sorry.
I think she was just referring that, you know, Japan seems to be going direction, or you're suggesting Japan becomes energy independent in a world economy where it seems that the consumption of resources is increasing, not decreasing, so where there is a gap in those trends.
But for example, the already iron ore prices dropped huge. Why? Chinese consumption became down. Why it downed? I think it's very basic background is the saturation. For example, I will show the case of cemento. I am following cemento deposition in the country. In China, per capita deposition of cemento is now 18 tons per capita. In United States, it's 16 tons per capita. The per capita deposition of cement is already bigger in China. In China, more than five times concrete-made things, roads and buildings exist now. I think it's more than saturation. That is the very basic background of iron ore price decrease. So it's already happening, I think. So compatibility of my idea with the global economy has to be done. That is my idea. It's already occurring.
Thank you.
I think the only the way, I don't know only, well, no, but the, I think one way to avoid this economic crisis due to that saturation is my way, I think.
Thank you, Komiya-san. Two more questions, and that will be the end of it. The gentleman in the back and then the other gentleman on this side. And if you can be very brief, because we're out of time.
Yes, sir. Daniel Vasquez, CEO of IntelliWings International Consulting. And Samuel Huntington, in his book Culture Matters, said that some cultures are just naturally better at adapting and improving than other cultures. Do you think that Japan's methodical approach culturally will ultimately help it?
Methodical.
Will that help Japan in the long run or hurt Japan? And how can American international consulting companies like mine help Japan in such a process? Thank you.
Thank you. And one last question. If you can raise your hand again so they can see you.
Thank you. Alex Forster from the East-West Center. My understanding is that there's a trend in Japan where single-family homes often don't last. They're not passed on from generation to generation or sold. Instead, they're torn down and rebuilt. Does this have any implications for widespread use of renewable technology or major impacts, as you see it, on efficiency and resource consumption? And if it is problematic, is it something that can be tackled and addressed at a social level? Thank you.
Thank you.
Last question was what?
We're talking about national characteristics that help explain Japan's success in the past, and the question was that Japan is known to be a country of, you know, methodic approach to problem solving, and where you seeing that one of the reasons why Japan has been successful in the past. And then I think there was a plug-in for how good consulting companies.
Maybe it's not direct answer, but I think the weak point of Japan can be compromised by the strong point of the United States, I think. Frontier spirit of the United States is what we wish to have. So both countries are very strong in technology. In 20th century, we have 16 Nobel laureates. This is the second largest number. First is, of course, the United States, close to 100. But after Japan, England is 12, I think. Germany, 8 or something. So Japan is the world's second strong country with respect to science. And so both countries, United States and Japan, are very strong in technology, science and technology. But Japan has problems in advance of the world. United States is young, but you have frontier spirit, I think, which I admire. So if we collaborate, I think the collaboration is the world's strongest, I think. And the second is social I think the anyway, we have to solve the small birth rate, now 1.4. We are competing with Germany. We are 1.44 in Japan, 1.42 in Germany. We win, but very close. But this is a very important question. I think that information and the communication technology and the change of work style is key for a better life and the larger birth rate, because the now the telecommuting is not so often in Japan, but I think it's enough. 80% of the hours, Mitsubishi Research Institute people are working for computer. Then only once a week they should commute physically. And other 4 days, they can do it teleworking. Then the young ladies who have babies can continue to work. I think that is very important. So such kind of technological support can change our society.
I would vote for that teleworking system. Thank you. Well, thank you so much. This has been a delightful conversation. Please join me in thanking Professor Komiyama.
Thank you. Thank you very much.